Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at hearstranch.com. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. I'm here with Sophie Schlesinger, co-host and producer extraordinaire.
Hi, everybody.
And today we are continuing our conversation about urban cheesemaking.
Part two.
Part two. Yeah. Yes, with Matt Spiegler, who is actually a friend of Elena Santigade, who was on our Urban Cheesemaking Part 1.
That's right. Hello.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is amazing.
Well, we're really excited to have you. And maybe we can just start off. What do you do in your, you know, 9-to-5 life or whatever hours, you know, you keep?
And yeah. From 9 to 6 or 7 or so, you know,
New like York, a good New Yorker.
9 to 5, yeah. I'm actually a web developer. So by day, I'm, you know, pushing pixels and doing code. But nights, weekends, and any other spare moment is when I'm a cheesemaker.
Wow. And so what got you into this? What kind of sparked the cheese bug?
That's hard to say. I mean, I grew up with a French mom. My mom is Alsatian, so cheese was always kind of a part of our cult, you know, the house and our daily diet, basically. And, you know, my first encounters with stinky cheese were at my grandparents' house, you know, them pulling the cheese box out of the fridge and, you know, me being horrified as a kid by the smells coming out of it. I mean, there was that. Also, you know, I kind of grew up not on a farm, but sort of around a farm and part of a community that had a farm in it in upstate New York, a biodynamic farm. So I was kind of sort of being part of that community and, you know, drinking the milk from the farm and eating the cheese. You know, that was sort of where it started, I guess.
Which farm was it, if you don't mind
Hawthorne Valley.
Okay, yeah, Hawthorne Valley. Great. Yeah.
And that's I went to the Waldorf place. School across the street.
Great.
Cool.
But it wasn't really until after college that, you know, when I moved to Chicago and got my first copy of the Steve Jenkins book. So, cheese
primer. That'll do it.
Yep.
So many episodes somehow come back to Steve Jenkins.
Yeah.
I feel like.
No, we got to have him back. Yeah. Steve, where are you?
Yeah,
come back on the show.
But so that's where I kind of, you know, sort of as an eater of cheese, you know, really became passionate about it, you know, and really got sort of interested in learning everything I could. But it was probably only a few years ago. I think partly just, you know, I'd always been interested in the process of cheese making, but it felt really daunting. It felt like, you know, you had to, you know, go to ag school or get a culinary degree or something like that if you wanted to get involved at all. So
how did you make that leap? Like, what was your first cheese making?
Yeah.
Very first cheese making experiment was probably, you know, simple like mozzarellas or ricottas or things like that, you know, just basic fresh cheeses. You know, probably did that for a year or so, did some paneers, you know, sort of the simpler cheeses, the easy cheeses to make, relatively speaking. But
yeah, I know. I've never been able to make mozzarella at home.
Really?
Somebody's got to teach me.
You got to take Elena's class, actually.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, then, you know, at some point I just decided I wanted to take it to the next step. And, you know, I started getting more into goat cheeses and chèvres, doing the lactic cheeses first. And then, getting into aged goat cheeses, the first experiments of which pretty much failed miserably because I was trying to age them in my fridge, which, you know.
is a strange microcosm full of many, many things.
I mean, you know, they made great grating cheeses, you know, little hard little bricks, but But eventually I invested in I found a used wine refrigerator on Craigslist. So I was able to get set up with more of a real aging environment. And that's kind of where it took off. So,
And currently, what kind of cheeses do you make? I mean, what cheeses are you most proud of?
Right now, probably my main cheese is a ash-coated Blumy Rind cheese, working title Gouanish. although maybe Gouanish terroir is not something you want to sell.
But, well, the ish, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, Gouanish.
Yeah.
Because I live near the Gouanish, but not right on top of it. It's a Gouanish, but...
you don't gather the ash from the...
No, I'm not brining it in Gouanish water, so don't worry. But,
that's good.
But so that's kind of the main cheese I'm doing these days. That's kind of a geotrichum and a penicillium candidum rinded cheese, similar to a Valençoise. Other than that, I'm doing all the fresh cheeses, feta cheese, cheddars, starting to get into alpine style cheeses, although can't really call them alpine since I'm not in the mountains, but you know.
Gouanish.
Yes. Mountain-ish.
Yeah.
But
that's, and so do you find that fridge that you have, the wine fridge, is that kind of an equally hospitable environment for all these different styles of cheese? Or do you do one batch at a time, keep them separate, or are they all kind of aging in there at the same time?
They're all kind of aging in there at the same time, which, I mean, there seems to be some variation, like a lower humidity and temperature near the bottom of the fridge, whereas it's a little warmer but also a little wetter up near the top. So I'll kind of keep my the Gouanishes will be up near the top, and then the cheddars will be sort of stacked in the bottom corner. So I mean, it's, I'm sure it's not ideal, but it
no does, but that's seem that's amazing. Yeah, that's really fascinating.
So I mean, the biggest challenge is just space, you know, because, you know, you run out of space really quickly. It's about a 16-bottle wine refrigerator, so.
Wow. What do you do with all the cheese? Do you just enjoy it with friends? Do you have, like, cheese
right now, I'm just
parties?
Enjoying it with friends, you know, bringing it to parties, giving it away to coworkers, you know. I mean, right now I feel like I'm really, you know, I have so much to learn right now, and I'm sort of in the learning stage, and so I'm really just giving it away and, you know, getting honest opinions from people about the cheeses. So,
and do you plan to do any kind of more kind of, I guess, structured, like, you know, learning, like going to a farm or, you know, taking classes or workshops? And where are you kind of, I don't know, where's the next step for the educational piece?
Well, I mean, actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be going and doing the 4-day class at VIAC.
Cool.
So
great.
That's kind of the next step for me. I've also been make cheese with Peter Kindle up at Hawthorne Valley. He was kind enough to let me participate in that. So, you know, I'm just, as much as possible, I'm looking for opportunities to, you know, make cheese or work with cheese or, you know, learn in any way I can, you know.
And VIAC is the Vermont Institute for Artisan Cheese, for anyone who wants to look it up.
They have great workshops, it seems like, for tasting and sensory evaluation to, you know, practical hands-on workshops for beginner cheesemakers and more seasoned cheesemakers. It's a really great resource.
Yeah. And like right now I'm kind of more at the, you know, 2-gallon pot on a stove level. So, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to actually working with in a real cheesemaking environment, you know.
Right. So, where everything's like kind of, you know, there are drains in the floor.
Yeah,
it's all built for exactly what you want to do. Yeah. And what about your kind of, you know, aspirations for cheese making in the future? Do you imagine that one day you want to be a full-time cheesemaker? Or?
I mean, that's, you know, the dream long-term, definitely. You know, right now I'm kind of just taking it day by day and sort of, you know, learning what I can and doing what I can, you know, with the hopes that, you know, of eventually arriving at that point. But, you know, I mean, it's difficult to say, like, as an urban cheesemaker, how many opportunities will actually present themselves to be, you know, sort of a serious, you know, cheesemaker within an urban environment. I mean, there's Beecher's.
There's Beecher's, and there's Salvatore Brooklyn.
Salvatore Brooklyn.
And in England, we spoke with Bill Oglesheald, Oglethorpe, who makes a cheese called Oglesheald. Sorry, Bill. And so, who knows? I feel like it's kind of the next step, you know?
Yeah.
First there were breweries, and then there were cheesemakers.
Yeah.
I have friends who are starting a brewery, so I was wondering if, you know, I was kind of playing with the thought of, you know, is it possible to sort of have a brewery slash cheese plant.
Yeah.
Similar spaces. Like, it seems like maybe competing microbes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. But you never know.
Need a real firewall between them.
Yeah, totally. But that would be like, God, a heavenly destination.
Like an urban, like fermented foods
village
warehouse. Yeah. or something.
The DeKalb market. We could launch the urban fermented foods village.
But yeah, keep an eye out for Narwhal Brewery. That's the brewery.
Oh, cool. Yep. Narwhal. I like that.
Yep. Yeah.
So what about sourcing milk? Where do you source your milk?
Well, when I'm upstate, I'll go to Hawthorne Valley and get the raw milk there. Otherwise, it's usually farms in New Jersey or Pennsylvania for goat's milk. I mean, I usually work with raw cow's milk, but pasteurized goat's milk at this point. So
just because it's easier to source?
Just because it's easier to source, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For a little while, my friend Kelly would go down to West Virginia to visit her sister and bring back like the most awesome raw goat's milk. Mm. There was a guy who had a bulk tank, and you know, you could go there with your big, you know, ball jar and fill up 2 quarts and bring. Right. Oh, man. But yeah, it's not. That was the only time I've ever had raw goat's milk on a regular basis.
And I would love to work with sheep's milk, but that's even harder to get. And
it's like gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think now's a good time to take a quick break. We'll just do a real quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about your work, about the urban cheese making community here in New York. And then also about your subtitling side gig. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
Pennies in a stream, falling leaves, a sycamore, moonlight in Vermont. I see fingers wave, ski trails on a mountainside, snow light in Vermont. Telegraph cables, they sing down the highway and travel each bend in the road. People who meet in this romantic setting.
Kind of makes you want to go to Vermont listening to that song. I'm going to sign up for that VIAC workshop. No, I'm just kidding. So we are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. We're talking about urban cheesemaking with Matt Spiegler, who is a web developer by day and a cheesemaker by night. So let's talk a little bit about the cheesemaking community here in New York. It's something that I kind of just learned about when we did our first show with Elena Santigade. And it seems like, you know, there's just more people making cheese than I thought. Do you correspond regularly with lots of other cheesemakers and troubleshoot different things, or do you see yourself as a lone ranger?
Well, honestly, a lot of the people I communicate with are sort of not necessarily New York centric or in New York, but are kind of all over the country or the world even. I mean, I'm talking to people, you know, all around America on like a cheese forums online or Twittering or Tumblring with cheesemakers in England, especially, who are going to the School of Artisan Food, you know, as well as people in New York. So, I mean, it's more of a global community. For me, that's the way I experience it than a New York specific community, so far at least. I mean, it would be great to, you know, get some meetups started with cheesemakers in New York, you know, maybe even, I don't know, share resources or something, you know, share aging spaces or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, you know, the people are definitely out there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So, well, I don't know, maybe you and Elena can scheme, get a group together. 61 Local seems to be the place to, you know, do all these things.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. What was I going to say? Oh, when you're talking about sharing information online, are there any good cheesemaking apps? We were talking about apps on the way over here, and that seems there like it'd be a genius thing.
I've actually thought about that, that would be a great thing to develop, but that, as far as I know, there aren't any sort of cheese making apps for the iPad or Android or anything like that. So yeah, maybe a Saxby branded.
Oh no, well, I was thinking, or your thing too. I mean, we don't know about making cheese; we just know about selling it.
Selling cheese, wrapping cheese.
Yeah, we could do the retailer demo side of it.
Yeah.
Well, interesting, very interesting. All right. Well, so let's talk a little bit about this side project that you decided to do. There was a French film that came out about cheese, and you decided to do everybody the great service of subtitling it in English.
Yeah. I don't know. It was this documentary that came out, I guess, last fall, called The War of the Stinky Cheeses. And, I mean, it was a really interesting documentary looking at sort of the rise of American artisan cheeses at the same time as French, the French cheeses of terroir are kind of going through hard times, and you know, small cheesemakers are disappearing in France. So, I mean, it was this really interesting documentary, but you know, there were no subtitled versions available online. So I figured, you know, what the heck, it needs subtitles. I need to practice my rusty French, so you know, I might as well do it. You know, and plus I had my mom to help me with any of the difficult words, so.
Ah, that's great.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's good to have an Alsatian mother up your sleeve.
Yes. Yeah, there was some very strange French terminology.
Yeah.
That I just couldn't figure out, you know.
Yeah.
But she knew what it meant, so. Yeah, but I mean, I think it's definitely a documentary worth checking out, you know.
And how can you see it? Is it up on YouTube or something like
that? It's on YouTube. If you Google The War of the Stinky Cheeses, you'll find it. You can also go to my blog, which is cheesenotes.tumblr.com, and it's there as well.
Okay.
But I mean, it seems to me like there's a lot of, you know, the American cheese scene right now is ripe for documentation, but it's happening in books, but it's really not happening in film or television much at all. So
yeah.
Sort of to see a documentary film, which is looking at cheese from more than just a novelty or sort of an ooh stinky perspective, you know, and kind of from an educated perspective as well, you know.
Right.
And to see the French, the American cheese scene through French eyes is sort of a particularly interesting perspective, I think. But
yeah. So now, what was their take? I mean, how did they react to American cheeses? With suspicion or, you know?
No, I mean, they were definitely enamored with it. I mean, it's almost a love letter to the, you know, the new American cheese scene, but it's also a warning to the French that they're at risk of losing their cheese culture. And you know, there is sort of this question of, you know, what does it mean when you have all these American cheesemakers going to France and training with French cheesemakers and then bringing those skills that they learned in the French terroirs back to America and, you know, sort of trying to replicate it. You know, what are those new cheeses exactly, and what does it mean for, you know, the French cheese culture and history.
Yeah.
You know,
we were actually having that conversation at lunch today because Laura Duboulot, who works with us at our cheese cave and who's actually in the film, was bringing back a small cheese from Hervé Mons came to the U.S. about a week and a half ago, and he brought over a small cheese from the Savoie that's kind of supposed to be like a Vacheron. But it's a touch different, and she was describing it to us, and she's like, well, it's kind of like a Vacheron. She's like, but it's kind of, you know, like Windermere or Rush Creek. And she stopped and she's like, it's so weird to be comparing French cheeses to American, you know, using American cheeses as a reference for French.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was kind of a funny moment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's definitely some great kind of cross-cultural stuff, going on.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in France, because I feel like, I don't know, unless some, you know, more like dorky young people, you know, like us, sort of interested in that sort of lifestyle, it's a difficult battle, you know, to save those cheeses.
Yeah. And now you have President Sarkozy banning French cheese, or banning cheese courses from his dinners.
What?
Apparently, yeah. It was just in the news, so.
That is awful.
I guess he's very health conscious, and Carla Bruni has convinced him, you know, not to eat cheese anymore.
But, oh, come on. You
know. What? Oh, my God. That's shocking. I was like, maybe we just need to sing him a breathy little song about the virtues of cheese and see if he changes his mind. Wow, that's the worst. Presidents always have bad eating habits, though.
Yeah.
Well, not always, but, you know, I read this book a long time ago called The Taste of America. It was written by John and Karen Hess, and the one time John Hess was the food critic for the New York Times, and they were talking about all these horrifying presidential, you know, favorite snacks, like cottage cheese and ketchup, and just like, whoa, terrible. So I guess you can't trust politicians for when it comes to good food.
But yeah, I think the scene with Mateo Keller and Jasper Hill is also just is, you know, a fascinating one. Because, I mean, this is like the Cellars of Jasper Hill are kind of this institution that will probably change cheesemaking for the next century, you know, in America. And to sort of see the French visiting it and marveling at it, you know.
Well, and that's another sort of, cross-cultural partnership, because I know they worked closely with Neil's Yard Dairy and with Hervé Mons to kind of design that place. And, you know, it's just great to know that, you know, all this sharing of knowledge is benefiting everyone. And who knows, God forbid, one day maybe all the Frenchies could come over here and, you know,
learn make how cheese to make
in Vermont and Quebec and, you know, and head back.
I think that'll be a long time coming.
Definitely. So what are some of your other favorite sources for knowledge, you know, when it comes to, you know, cheesemaking? Do you have any particular books or other films that you really enjoy?
Well, in terms of films, I mean, there is the Will Studd Cheese Slices series, which is pretty great. I mean, that's a good one. There aren't that many other films that I can think of, though. I don't know. There's a great film about sheep called Sweetgrass. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No.
Sort of the last of the... cowboy sheep herders out west who like take their sheep up in the summer and then come back in the fall. But other than that, I mean, in terms of books, the new artisanal cheesemaking book from Mary Carlin is a good one that just came out.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah. Just came out, I want to say, a couple months ago.
And that's the title, The New American?
I believe so. I think it's artisanal. Sorry, I can just look it up. Artisan Cheesemaking at Home by Mary Carlin.
Ah, great. So, okay. That's a good one. I know Ricky Carroll did way back in the day.
Yes. Yeah. I think The Home Cheesemaking by Ricky Carroll is a book you have to have, pretty much. And actually, this new book, Artisan Cheesemaking, the author worked with one of the guys, Jim, who works with Ricky Carroll. He worked with this new book on the recipes.
Ah, okay.
American Farmstead Cheese by Paul Kinstedt is another good one. There's a great chapter in there by Peter Dixon, so which is kind of a must read. But.
Cool. Yeah, Paul Kinstedt, Peter Dixon, two heroes.
Yeah. Yep.
They're absolutely great. And what about equipment? You know, besides your wine fridge that you found, what do you think is, you know, just a good source for home cheesemakers? I mean, do you need fancy stuff, or where do you get your equipment?
I mean, you really don't need... I mean, I'd say the aging environment is probably the most, you know, complicated piece of equipment you're going to get. Although you could even just get a dorm refrigerator and there's ways to modify it to get it to work.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, I get... most of my stuff either comes from New England Cheesemaking, which is cheesemaking.com. There's also Dairy Connection is another good one, dairyconnection.com.
Mm-hmm.
Glengarry Cheese Making Supply is in Canada.
All right.
But Margaret Morris.
Yeah.
I think they only do mail order and phone order, though. They don't currently have a site, but...
I gotta love that. The Luddite appreciates that.
But there are, like, it's good to have multiple sources, because it seems like there's certain, like, cultures. If you're looking for certain cultures, like, you know, this site will have Mezzo 2 and 3, and this other one will have Mezzo A and B, and, you know, like, they don't all necessarily have the same ones, so it's good
to have. You have to kind of pick and choose.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
The Fromage X catalog is great. It's kind of cheese porn, cheese making equipment porn. So
totally, I was like, oh, if only I had one of those like giant like vats to coagulate my lactic cheese. Fit in a
100-gallon vat in my studio apartment, no problem.
There you go. Yeah, you can put like a wood board over it and use it as a dinner table. Fine. Yeah,
put a mattress on it, sleep on it.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
And tell us a little bit more about your blog. You've done some other pretty crazy stuff. I think you had one thing where you ate like hundreds of cheeses for a year.
I did the 365 cheese challenge. I don't want to... I'm hesitant to talk about it because I don't want to make it sound like some sort of man versus cheese extreme food challenge or something. But I kind of just sort of set this challenge for myself to eat 365 different cheeses in a year, you know, which I guess is not that hard if you're working in a cheese shop, probably. But
No, that's a task.
Yeah.
But I wanted them to be 365 different ones and sort of document them. Yeah, as different I ate ones. Them.
That's a lot of cheese.
And I ended up eating like 430 over the course of the year.
Well done.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Good to overshoot your goal.
And my cholesterol did not go up at all. So
See, Sarkozy, what the heck are you talking about?
Hat tip to Max McCallman. You know, cheese is healthy.
Cheese is definitely healthy.
Yeah.
That's really fun. Yeah. And where were your sources for these cheeses? Were you like scouring the city to find like every cheese nook and cranny? Or?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, Saxelby, Stinky Cheese, Murray's, you know, sort of all the cheese shops in town. But I was kind of the annoying customer who would be like peering in the back to see, you know, the cheese that I hadn't tried, you know.
And did you have any like transcendent moments where there like a couple cheeses that you're just like, oh my God, that was totally worth it?
There were quite a few of those. I mean, definitely the first time I tried Rush Greek, that was a transcendent moment. A cheese called Affiletta, which I had in Switzerland, actually, is a Corsican sheep's milk cheese, which is kind of like being kicked in the face by a sheep, but it was amazing.
A little bit gentler.
A little bit, but not much. I mean, yeah. I was the only one who liked that cheese, but I thought it was amazing. But
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, other than that, on the blog, I just sort of track my track the cheeses that I try and photograph them, and also write about, you know, cheese news and politics and dairy politics and things like that. So
that's really great.
Yeah.
That's really great. We gotta check it out and see. I know Sophie already has, but I have got to check it out. And once again, for our listeners, how can they find your blog?
It's Cheese Notes. It's actually a Tumblr site, so it's cheesenotes.tumblr.com.
cheesenotes.tumblr.com. Cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing with us your cheese making exploits.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And thank you for doing that work to subtitle that film.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I cannot wait to go. Yes.
Well, you haven't seen how I subtitled you, so maybe you should check that first.
I'm sure it was awesome. Well, we'll have to keep revisiting this urban cheese making topic because we've just kind of gotten the tip of the iceberg, it seems.
Yeah, so. If urban cheese makers, if you're out there, please write to us. info@heritageradionetwork.com.
And we will have you on the show.
Yeah.
So, until next Monday, this has been your weekly episode of Cutting the Curd.
Bye.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.